Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
Listeners, we are so glad you've joined us today on the river, and we have a program that you're going to really appreciate lined up for you. This is Jeannie St. John Taylor, and I'm here with my very good friend and co-host, Maxine Marcellini. Hi, Maxine.
Hi, Jeannie. Hi there. Hi. It is a good day.
It is a good day. It is a good day. You know, Maxine, I don't know about you, but I am rarely as loving as I would like to be. I feel like I fail so often in that area. Do you have that problem too?
Well, I don't think you are alone in that. I think every one of us have struggled with that, and I've had my moments with it too. And especially when people are difficult, it's really hard to feel like loving. But we've got to figure out how to love despite our feelings.
Yeah.
So we have the perfect guest for that today.
We do. And I will say about you, Maxine, I have experienced you as a very loving, merciful person with a lot of wise advice, and I appreciate that about you. And I have a feeling that there are listeners out there who need this program, don't you think? Either they need to learn how to love better, or they are experiencing right now a time of difficulty where someone is treating them in a way that's unloving and they're suffering.
Yeah, you know, you are really right about that, Jeannie, because until I understood God's love, I couldn't understand my love being given or my response to love being received or not received.
Right.
And it made a huge difference and turned my world around.
Yeah. Well, we have a guest today, listeners, that you're going to really, really like. We are talking with William P. Smith, who has a Master's of Divinity as well as a PhD, and he is pastor and director of the Community Counseling Center at Shelton Baptist Church in Dresher, Pennsylvania. He has other books besides this one, which include Caught Off Guard, Encounters with the Unexpected God, Grace Through the Ages, How Do I Stop Losing It with My Kids? Oh, that's a good one. And How to Love Difficult People. That's an even better one. He and his wife, Sally, have three active children. And we are very excited to have you today, Bill. Welcome to our show.
Thank you, Jeannie. Thank you, Maxine.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here.
Yes, we appreciate that. You know, let's just dig right into the book right away. You say that we all long for good relationships. What is it about humans that makes us crave social interaction? You know, I had a son who, when he was just a little tyke, like 2 years old, he would say, I need people. I need people. And I thought, yeah, I do too, Ty. So what is it that makes us crave social interaction?
That's great. Actually, my son, when he was two, four, in that range, would draw pictures, and all of his pictures always had some kind of companion, whether that was a stuffed animal or a friend, and the same kind of thing, just a longing for relationship.
Mm.
I think it's built into us. It's in our DNA. You go back into Genesis, and you realize that God creates humankind in his image. And I think in our American obsession with us as individuals, we forget that God is actually three persons in one, and that he created us to reflect not him simply as an individual, but as a community. And so there's something good about us being together that obviously gets blown up at the fall, but then you flip over to Ephesians and you realize that God is reconnecting us. And so in the very first half of chapter 2, God is saving you as an individual, but the second half, he saves you into a community. And we just long for a relationship. It's who he's made us to be.
Well, while we desire good relationships, the reality is that many are broken and needing serious repair. So generally speaking, what goes wrong for most of us? Because I think we all have that. We really need the relationship, but I think always relationships need repair. Do you think so? Do you think always?
I think always. There isn't a single one of us who cares for other people just like Jesus would in our position. And there isn't a single one of us who, regardless of how good our family was parented as though Jesus were one of our parents. And so I think we pick things up from each other that are ways of relating that are destructive, but we do them anyway because it just feels right in that moment. And so when we're in a difficult, tense kind of encounter, some of us instinctively shrink back because that's what we experienced growing up, where some of us get very belligerent and lash out, even though we know that that's not going to help, but it just feels right in the moment. We're not really sure what else to do. And I think it's that combination of bad experiences that we've had coupled with I don't know what else to do in this moment that we then buy into and say, well, then it's not great, but it's all I know.
And we kind of start building protective walls around ourselves that shut people out instead of bringing them in.
Sure. And I think part of that is we don't know how to actually engage somebody who is being unpleasant or who's suffering or having some difficulty in their life. And I think you're right. It's much easier to protect than to extend ourselves. That hurts.
You know, I was talking to a friend on the phone last night, and we were having a conversation about how shocked she is and how shocked I am at how defensive we both tend to be. It's like,
how it's so the very first thing in your mind to come back and to explain or to help someone else understand, and there covers for defensiveness. Yeah, I find the same in my own self. I actually had an internal conversation earlier today where I was building defenses against someone who was not talking to me.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is crazy. Look at how much I'm invested in trying, like you're saying, trying to defend myself, trying to look good in somebody else's eyes.
We should have been talking. I was having an identical situation. Identical conversation, identical situation. Maxine, did you want to ask him? Maxine may have dropped.
It did drop me, and I have just gotten back in. So
I keep waiting long periods for you to say something. Okay, go ahead.
It
you have a question?
Finally dropped me.
Okay. What's wrong with having reasonable expectations in our relationship, Bill? I mean, or do you think we should just accept the fact that it's going to be terrible and live with it?
That is such a tricky question, because what is reasonable to me may not be reasonable to you, and what I expect is there are varying degrees of expect. For instance, I expect my teenage son not to leave all of his soccer equipment in the middle of the living room. He has a different expectation of life at this point in time. And we have many conversations about his expectations and my expectations. Here's the difference. If I expect him to clean up his stuff in such a way that I withhold all relational goodwill until he gets in line, then I've gone from reasonable to unreasonable. Because I don't have a father in heaven who treats me that way. I have a father in heaven who embraces me, who comes near to me. He does discipline me. He does not put up with everything that I want to have in my life. But he does it in such a way that we don't lose relationship. And when my expectations move me or move other people to break relationship, they're no longer reasonable in the way that God would define reasonable.
So, Bill, how do you do relationships on that level then that you don't, that you can still discipline and you cannot push the person away or cause this wall to be built up?
I think that's a great question. I think it probably takes decades. I think I'm still in the front end of learning
things.
That.
Can't be done.
Yeah.
But I think what it does
kids.
Then,
how are you doing it?
It moves me to have a different level of conversation with my son, more along the lines of, hey, we've talked about this. you in that moment agreed with me, but now I'm finding that your actions are moving in a different direction. Number one, what's going on? Number two, is this the person that you want to be? Someone who agrees outwardly and then doesn't do? Or do you want something else out of life? In other words, the conversation shifts away from the soccer equipment that I'm tripping over to the person in front of me who I'm starting to sense is in danger from something going on inside of them.
You know, you talk about our human relationships mirroring our relationships with God. Do you think that's one of those, and in what ways do we?
I do, and that's actually my hope, because if I can only give to other people what I myself have experienced, and I'm in a closed-loop system where other people have treated me poorly and I now treat other people poorly, et cetera, I'm in big trouble. But the reality is that Jesus has broken into my world, that he has loved me before I ever even thought of loving him, and that I now have a regular, ongoing, present-moment experience of what it is to be loved. And so he's not asking, demanding that I create love out of thin air, but first he loves me in the moment and then invites me to give some of that love away to the people around me.
That's a beautiful thing. That's really beautiful.
Can I read a quote, Maxine, in the
sure.
book that I want? Yeah. What you say, and you're talking about words and speaking to people, and it's on page 119. You say, it seems that the more potential a human characteristic has to display the glory of God, the more greater power it has to hurt and destroy when it's twisted. Instead of reflecting God with the way we use our words, we too often portray the deceiver. Did you want to say anything about that? I love that quote.
Thank you. I think what I'm trying to get at there is that God has gifted each of us differently. And those gifts, while they can just communicate his glory and his presence in terrific ways, visible ways to the rest of us, they can also really be used in that same way for harm. And so someone who is really gifted with their words can either be someone who encourages you in your life to become everything that God's meant you to be, or they can just as easily manipulate you and cause you incredible amounts of harm and direct you down roads that you really are much better not going down.
So how does one protect themselves against that? For instance, if you're married to a person doing that, how do you protect against that if they're taking you down a road you should not be on?
That's a great question. Protect is, again, one of those difficult words, because protect implies that I have no other option except to guard. And there are those cases where you've tried everything else and there isn't anything else that you can do. But I think, again, I want to think about love that not only protects me but actually engages you, and to whatever extent I can moves toward you. And if you won't let me move toward you, then maybe I can invite some other people together, and together we can move toward you. But somehow I want to be able to say, this is our experience of you. Do you see what we see? Because it doesn't look good on this end of it.
Mm. Is that kind of like running an intervention with that person?
Differently said, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Is that one of those things that you talk about, suffering with that kind of a person that doesn't have a lifespan you can conveniently schedule? What do you mean by that? Is that it, kind of?
That's a little, maybe a little differently, but what I was thinking there, when suffering doesn't have a lifespan, I'm thinking that the things that I have experienced in my life, I experience them differently than you would. You have a different background, you have a different upbringing, you have a different personality, you have different experiences, and so you would process the exact same event in different ways than I do. And therefore, we would anticipate that you might be able to handle it better, more quickly than I would. And you might go through exactly the same different kinds of stages that I would in dealing with that suffering, but maybe you'll go through them quickly. You'll go through them in ways that handle them, that have less impact on you or less effect on other people. And we can't really say that you and I should then be all done with this thing at a certain point in time. It's not going to get put into anybody's calendar in a neat kind of way. And yet I regularly find people who have had something significantly disrupt their lives, and other people say to them, well, you should be over this by now.
Mm.
And I find that a very unhelpful thing to say to someone, for instance, mm-hmm. who just lost their spouse. At what point should they be over this, that the two became one, that the two became one and lived for several decades together or many decades together? Will they ever on one level be over this? I don't know. Can they get past where they are? I would hope. But that doesn't look the same for each different person.
Very true. One of the things you've done with this book is you've got three portions, three parts, and you've got 15 parts to love, which I find maybe our listeners need to hear the parts that are involved in love so that they know what they can find within this book, because you've got quite some interesting titles to your chapters here. Would you share those with us, Bill?
Sure. Do you want to go through all 15?
Well, sure. If we can do it just
quickly.
Kind of quickly.
Okay.
I know you've got, just so there's a teaser out here of what's going on in this book.
Yes.
Got it. The first part is I'm thinking that love looks unique in a broken world. If this were a perfect world, there are aspects of love that we would not touch. And therefore, in a broken world, you have to learn how to comfort people. You have to learn how to be sympathetic to other people. You have to acknowledge that people on a regular basis sin, and so we struggle together. That means that at some point, another chapter, we're going to need to forgive each other, and we're probably going to have to bear patiently with each other, different chapter. And so just...
I would like to say, tell listeners as you're going through these, that you offer very practical ways of doing all these things that you're saying. So go ahead.
Thank you. There's questions in the back that help you process this and what does this mean in your own life. But that was the hope, is that it would not simply draw large pictures, but it would also give the practical pieces. And so that first piece is there mostly just sort of a reaction to being in a broken world. Second one is a little bit more proactive, where I'm trying to think about how do I extend myself to you in such a way that you might actually believe that I'm for you, that I've got your back, that I'm in your corner. And so just thinking here about what does it mean to actually have friends, to partner together, or what does it mean to pursue somebody else, to communicate, to talk with each other, recognize that's a very important aspect of love, or to serve each other, or to actually provide for each other's physical needs. Gone through some really difficult things here in the last 6 weeks, and church families just rallied around my family, and they've provided meals for us, and they've said to us, there's not a whole lot else we can do, but we can feed you. And it literally brought tears to my eyes. I cried as my wife brought home one more casserole, and I was like, I can't believe this kind of love. And you realize...
So practical, isn't it? Yeah.
It is. Yeah. And they're communicating, hey, we're behind you. We are with you. In a way that the cards are nice, but wow, the meal really communicates. And then that last chapter is just acknowledging that love doesn't simply live in a broken world, but one day the brokenness is going to be gone and love still will be here. So what will love look like? And that helps us understand how we can actually enjoy that here now. And so recognizing that
Help us understand this portion more, because some people need this kind of hope, I think, landed in their lap.
Yes.
Recognizing that the community of God's people, his family, at this point is a mixture. Some of us are still wrestling with brokenness. We're all wrestling with brokenness, but we're also tasting now the goodness of what we're going to have forever. And so you read through the Bible, and you see over and over and over that you're told to greet each other. You start to realize that that's not just a nice way of opening or closing a letter, but that it communicates part of God's welcome to you. And that as you learn to greet, you're actually communicating love. Or you learning how to submit to each other, recognizing that's not for any one person, but it is for all of us to learn how to be humble with our brothers and our sisters. or we learn how to celebrate, that we rejoice with each other, or we learn how to live peacefully together and live harmoniously, and how not to crank each other up, but how to smooth the waters, as it were, or how we are hospitable, how we show kindness without grumbling that this is inconvenient. So more of those kinds of things that you can anticipate, yeah, we're still going to see that in the new heavens and the new earth. And if we're going to see them then, let's learn how to practice them now.
You know, that reminds me of a quote I heard on a monk show where he said, how can I help you in a way that won't inconvenience me? I love monk. You know, and I love the hope. I love the hope that you're giving us. And yet, back in the present, people keep hurting us and sinning against us, and you say that we need to anticipate being sinned against. I don't want to. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I don't want to either.
No.
And yet the reality, and you, we've hardly met, but I know a couple things about you all, and you know a couple things about me. And we know that both of us have suffered, and we both know that both of us sin. And we know that God's people, blood-bought, Holy Spirit-filled, saved, sanctified Christians sin. Therefore, I need to anticipate that I'm going to be sinned against. And frankly, if you want to have a friendship with me, I'm going to sin against you. I don't want to. I, by God's kindness and grace, I will repent, but I'm going to do that. And therefore, you're going to have to learn how to not be surprised by it, but learn how to engage a sinner in such a way that I might actually see repenting and confessing as a positive thing.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking about when you say that choosing to value people takes effort?
Yeah, that's a good bit of it. It's hard to value people. It's much easier to think about my own world and think about the things that I want to be engaged in. And to value someone else means I have to step outside of myself and consider who they are and what they need, which is not the same as what they want. That takes time and effort.
Where does God's mercy enter into the picture of love?
I can think of a number of different places. I think one of the biggest places is that he continues to love me when I don't love. And his mercy there is new for me, which reinvigorates me in order to engage the people that I'm kind of tired of loving too. And I realize that he continues to move into my life for my good. And as he does that, he gives me his heart. And he gives me the strength, the energy to overcome my weariness in doing good and my weariness in caring for other people.
Hmm. You know, you say that we need to submit. And actually, I think Jesus said that first, maybe. Do you think it's harder within a family or with people that you work with, people that you're close to? And what does that kind of submission look like?
Wow, what a great question. Is it harder in a family or harder with the people you work with? I think it really depends on what the expectations of the relationship and the expectations of the culture are. Is it harder for me to submit, let's say, to my children when they want something that inconveniences me? Or is it harder to submit to the person I find irritating at church? Yeah, it's probably about the same, to be frank. I have all these wonderful reasons why I should do neither.
Yeah.
And yet you have that incredible passage out of Philippians 2 where Jesus, being in very nature God, gave up everything in order not to make his life better but to make my life better. I think, all right, my whole idea of being important and special and not inconvenienced are probably more American and a mix of American and my own sinfulness far more than they are anything I've learned from my Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Well, you know, unfortunately, we're getting a little bit low on time. Maxine, we might have time for two more questions. I'll give you the first one.
Well, I'm wondering if anyone that's on our listening audience has figured out how to get a hold of William P. Smith.
There you go.
Maybe we ought to let him tell us
or
that
the name of the
and
book.
About his, the name of his book, definitely. And also, where would your speaking engagements maybe be likely to be found?
I have a website. It's called surprisedbygod.com. We have just gotten, just started to change it over from another one, so it's a bit incomplete, but that would be one easy way to contact me. That'd probably be the best way, frankly.
Surprisedbygod.com.
Right.
Okay.
And the name of Bill's book is Loving Well Even If You Haven't Been, and I think that's one of the best titles I've heard in a long time. And it speaks really well to what goes on in the book, which I love when a book says in the title what you're going to learn in the book. That's my favorite kind of book. So, okay, Maxine, you have another one.
Well, how important is the entire concept of love? Can we get through life without nailing that one down real well?
If God says that He is love and that we are to love one another, I'm not sure how you can avoid it.
Okay. So we ought to put our mind to doing it, right?
We ought to put our mind to doing it, but I think Paul's movement in Ephesians chapter 3 is maybe even more gets priority, which is that we first have to experience it.
Yeah,
and I love
I
the
totally
way that,
agree.
I love the way he prays that that Christ's love would reign in our hearts. Not that we would love God more, but that we would understand how much he loves us. And it's out of that that we are then motivated outwardly back to him and then to others.
So are you saying that if we don't have a human example of love, we still have a divine example of love? How do we have that? How do
and
we
even
find
more,
that?
Even more than an example, we have an experience. Right now, you and I have the best relationship we're ever going to have. We haven't tapped it out. We haven't investigated it, explored it. But we will never have a better friend than our God. And shame on us when we don't value him and enjoy him and engage him. We tend to hold him out as an example outside of ourselves instead of actually experiencing the relationship that he would want to build with us.
This has just been a wonderful show. I love your book, Loving Well Even If You Haven't Been, and I have enjoyed the show thoroughly. Is there one thing that you'd like to say that we haven't asked you about?
We've had a great conversation. I've really enjoyed this. I don't think there's anything there. I think, again, the word that you used earlier is hope, because that's what I have to cling to when I've loved badly.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that I haven't lost the love of my God, because that comes through Christ, and it's what he's done for me. And therefore, I have this rock-solid assurance that I can get up and try again, because I'm still loved.
Thank you. Listeners, thank you for joining us. And, Bill, thank you for being here today, and join us next week when it's a wonderful show. We're going to interview Kathy Collar. You want to tell them the topic, Maxine?
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at The River. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.